Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Hi, it's John. And the Allstate Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago. We're here weekdays 1 to 3.
Lord have mercy.
Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. I sure appreciate you tuning in. Lots of calls and texts these days. And that's much appreciated. That makes the show go round. To participate at any time, just call or text 312-981-7200. Love me some phone callers. I know folks like to text these days, but love the phone calls. Remember, on social media, we are WGN King John on this show, and at WGNradio.com, we also post a daily web poll question. We'll get to that in a little bit. You can still respond to it. We asked you about Taylor Swift using her brand to endorse some candidates. What did you think about that? The results on that coming up in just a couple of minutes. By the way, after 1:30, we're going to visit with Clay Jenkinson. You know, Clay Jenkinson is the guy who does the Thomas Jefferson shows, and he does the Teddy Roosevelt shows for us. And I had a conversation with him just before the show today. He couldn't join us live, and I just wanted to play part of that for you here. The whole 20-minute conversation is available as a podcast at WGNradio.com. But he's an interesting guy, Clay Jenkinson is, and when he talks about being Teddy Roosevelt on stage or living as Thomas Jefferson on stage, it's very fun and challenging. And he said something really interesting to me in the conversation that we recorded before the show today. In part, it was this.
I think that we have spent too much time being appalled by Donald Trump's demeanor, and we've forgotten that he really is more solid in his achievement on behalf of the people who elected him than sometimes it might appear.
Ain't that the truth? So that's part of the conversation, and we'll broadcast a little of that around 1:40 this afternoon, and then the full podcast is at our website. We'll talk later in the show today and tomorrow about what they're voting on in North Dakota and Michigan. And this is the thrust of the news click today. In fact, Producer Elif, maybe we could preview the news click a little early here. But we're asking about legalizing marijuana recreationally. I had a very interesting conversation this morning over breakfast with a friend who was telling me about his recreational use of marijuana and how at the end of a long day, where I'm having a cocktail, he's having a one hit, and how mellow that makes him for a couple of harmless hours in the backyard. I said, you know, I have never, ever in any form consumed marijuana. And he just shook his head and said, yeah, I know that about you. He says, I'm telling you. I guess when you're in your 50s, it's okay if one friend tries to encourage you to take marijuana, particularly since I was telling him about how I just came from Colorado, and they've got stores there, and they'll lace it in gummy bears if you like. So it's so legal, right? But it was just an interesting conversation because he was telling me how, you know, chill you get if you have a couple of drinks or you share a bottle of wine with somebody. He said, well, this marijuana stuff is pretty good these days, Johnny.
Are those weed gummy bears called gummy bears?
Yeah,
or do you just call them all gummy bears?
I don't believe I understand the question. Are you making fun of the way I pronounce the word, or are you asking about gummy bears?
Yeah. Is it, they're gummy bears.
Gummy bears.
Oh. Why are you, is that the German pronunciation because of Haribo?
Am I wrong in saying gummy bears? It's gummy bears, isn't
it? My uncle does the same thing, and he's obsessed with gummy bears.
I love those things.
I thought I just was out of the loop that the weed ones were called gummy bears, and I didn't know the name of them.
I got to learn how to say that, because I throw everybody off when I do that. I've all my life called them gummy bears, but it's gummy bears, right?
Yeah, unless we want to call the weed ones gummy bears.
No, I don't think that was the point I was making. The gummy bears with marijuana, and he's like, you know, this stuff's pretty good.
Well, they are gooey and gummy, so you could go either way.
Here's today's news click, by the way. Producer Elif, please.
Michigan and North Dakota will soon vote in November on making pot recreationally legal. I'd vote on that. I'd vote no on that.
So I vote yes or I vote no. Okay, well, let's see what we get. I don't know what we're going to get on this, because I've long said, oh, what the hell, let's clear the prisons. Let's stop having cops chase a little bit of reefer. But now I'm nervous that it's closing in all around us and that it might come to Illinois. I'm not sure I like the idea. It's not my cup of tea. I'm not passing judgment. I drink gin. So you're probably smarter than I am if you had your druthers. But there's just something about opening up that can of worms that now makes me nervous. We'll talk more about that a little later on.
Can of gummy worms?
That'll really throw people for a loop.
That was a Violetta line just now that I...
Can of gummy worms? John. All right. Fine, fine, fine. You read Mary Schmeek's column in the Chicago Tribune today. Mary's going to get in trouble. Love Mary Schmeek. And they don't hand out Pulitzer Prizes willy-nilly. And whenever she talks about the president, and she doesn't that often, she does it in verse. She writes poems about Donald Trump. And so her column today, I won't read all of it, but just if you're humored by this, enjoy. If not, then just don't bother to pick up the paper. But she wrote, here's the latest installment in my rhyming chronicle of the presidency of Donald J. Trump based on his own words. And then she has three or four poems that she published today. The first one is incredible. I went to Mississippi where I know that I'm adored, then did the brave and stately thing I mocked that Dr. Ford. I tried so hard these past few days to show how much I care about the rights of women folk. I almost grew a pair. I read that this morning and I laughed. I said, oh, Mary, you're going to be in trouble. People are going to say terrible things online about you now.
It's hard to rhyme, so.
I think she's a good poet. I mean, she can write serious poetry. She can at times write comical poetry, too. She wrote this one. It's called Home Again. The previous poem goes on and on and on. This one goes, hey, guess who'll be coming to dinner? By dinner, I really mean lunch. It's Kanye, my darker-skinned brother. I dig that hip rapper so much. Kanye West coming to the White House. The two of them are going to discuss how to beat down violence in Chicago. So don't worry, folks. They got that one solved. So that's Mary Schmeek's poem. But you know what's really interesting today, and maybe even more impactful, is A Scary Time, which is a song that has been written, performed on the internet, and now gone viral by a woman named Lindsay Lab, or at least that's the name she goes by. She's at Texas State University. Is she a dance instructor or something like that?
Yeah.
Dance teacher. So she's a bit of a musician, too. Now, in order to appreciate this, you first have to remember what the president said about what a scary time it is that we're living in. This is the president when, just as he's about to get on or off his presidential helicopter, they were asking him about the charges against Brett Kavanaugh. And the president said this.
Well, I say that it's a very scary time for young men in America when you can be guilty of something that you may not be guilty of.
So that was the line that, you know, maybe other people would regret having said. It's a scary time for young men in America. It's a scary time for them. And so she took that line, Lindsay Lab, a scary time, and she wrote a song that begins, I can't walk to my car late at night while on the phone. I can't open up my windows when I'm home all alone. I can't go to a bar without a chaperone. And I can't wear a mini skirt if it's the only one I own. But it sure is a scary time for boys. Yeah, gentlemen, band together and make some noise. The song goes on like that. Here's a little of it.
I can't walk to my car late at night while on the phone. I can't open up my windows when I'm home alone. I can't go to the bar without a chaperone. I can't wear a mini skirt if it's the only one I own. I can't use public transportation after 7 p.m. I can't be brutally honest when you slide into my DMs. I can't go to the club just to dance with my friends. And I can't ever leave my drink unattended. But it sure is scary time for boys. Yeah, gentlemen, band together, make some noise. It's really tough when your reputation's on the line. And any woman you've assaulted could turn up anytime.
She goes on like that. And she's a good singer, and she's a good little ukulele player, and the song is smart and cutting. She lists a lot of things the guys would never think about.
And every girl does daily basis.
Okay, so tell me if these resonate with you ladies, because I just think this is so interesting. I mean,
they're so simple, but so true.
She says, I can't live in an apartment if it's on the first floor.
Yes.
Are you kidding me? That's been you've thought about that before.
Always.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry for you. I'm so sorry. I've never thought about that. I never raised daughters, so I've never apartment shopped for young ladies. And Brenda and I have always been together. You know, whenever that was an issue, I never thought about that.
But to be fair, though, for me, it's not just because I'm a woman. It's because I don't want it to be easier for robbers.
A fear I don't have. I can't be wearing silk pajamas when I answer the door.
Yes, surprisingly relatable, right,
You're
Violetta?
Kidding me. Really? You like, think about...
You don't wear your pajamas when you open the door for someone.
Well, why would you?
I mean,
throw on a robe, at least.
I shouldn't either, but that's...
Right, one really should.
But
yeah,
I don't see that as suddenly making me vulnerable. I presume that's the subtext here, right?
Right.
And when you say silk pajamas, do you mean like a lingerie, or do you...
I'm just reading the line.
It says, you know, pajamas,
I can't live in an apartment if it's on the first floor. I can't be wearing silk pajamas when I answer the door.
When I think of that, I think of someone like I think, oh, I shouldn't be going to the door wearing
showing skin, or like I've changed out of shorts. Like I've put on sweatpants on top of shorts.
In either case.
And also, sorry to say this, but in front of you, but also don't answer the door without a bra on.
All
that's,
of those things
kind of weird too.
Are things the guys just have not had to consider. I mean, if I look like a doof, yeah, I'll de-doof myself. But, you know, never did I think that I was sending off a signal, right? Here's another line that follows silk pajamas when I answer the door. I can't have another drink, even if I want more. I can't make you feel invalid, unseen, or ignored.
Well, they obviously have gotten more serious as the song goes on. But, you know, when she starts with even just walking to your car late at night or being on the phone, I always have my keys ready, you know, in that defense thing they teach you with in between your knuckles. So it's just little things like that. If I see someone also parking at the same time as me, I'm like, okay, am I going to beat them to my door? Like you have to think about all these little
things. Isn't that sad? And important that somebody talk about this, even if it's in a song. There's another couple of lines here that I think men should hear and women should hear men hear in a minute on WGN. We're talking about that song, A Scary Time. So just if you're joining us, let's just cut to the song a little bit here, Producer Elle, if this is how her song in part goes.
After 7 p.m., I can't be brutally honest. When you slide into my DMs, I can't go to the club just to dance with my friends. And I can't ever leave my drink unattended. But it sure is scary time for boys. Yeah, gentlemen, band together, make some noise.
So she's mocking the president who said that after Brett Kavanaugh's fiasco, it sure is a scary time for boys. And then she says, well, guess what? Here's what it's like for ladies. Things that I never thought about. Some maybe make sense, but... I can't use public transportation after 7 p.m. I worry about that, but my number's more midnight. She says 7 p.m. I can't go to the club just to dance with my friends, and I can't ever leave my drink unattended. Does that resonate? I can't leave my drink
unattended? Okay, well, can I tell you, I have three sons that are older now, but I also always tell my boys never to leave your drink unattended.
I never thought of that. I still don't think of that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you got to really worry about that.
Some of these things are definitely
common
sense.
Yeah.
They're definitely common sense, some of them. And I think some of them she's being ironic. Like, I'm not allowed to be brutally honest when you slide in my DMs. A girl has to let someone down easy or else she's considered, you know.
Yeah, but the difference is, does a guy...
Right, a guy doesn't.
And therein lies
her
point.
That's the irony there.
She says, I can't be taken seriously if I'm holding back my tears. I can't speak out against my rapist after 35 years, and I can't jog around the city with headphones on my ears. Have you all thought about that? Headphones on your ears? Better not. I guess because somebody could sneak up on you and you don't hear them?
But that's one of those things, too. That's safety, I think, for anyone.
Yeah, I know
right.
that.
Anybody can be snuck up on.
Fair enough on
but,
that.
You know. But when I leave work here, you know, we have to walk a couple blocks to where I park. And if I can't, I don't listen to music once the, you know, sun goes down. But
this is Kathy on line one. You're on WGN. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air. Or at least I thought you were going to be. Kathy, are you there? I don't hear Kathy. Maybe we'll get her in a second. Dave, you're on WGN. Hey, Dave.
Yeah. Hi, good afternoon. Regarding the song, much of it is true for women. It's also a very scary time for men. And don't think it's not.
For the
That's
same
my comment. No, different reasons, but the age we're living in. Some of the things do apply to men also. Especially the first floor.
Yeah, but the point that the president was making is that it's a scary time for boys because women will accuse them of things and they can't fix it. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for the phone call. Well, I guess if you had to score it, and that's kind of what she's doing for us, how can you not conclude that it's not scarier for women than it is for boys?
I agree, but I do also wonder if some guys, you know, who have done wrong, if all guys are being held accountable for those people.
If I had to score it, I'll bet it's 1,000 to 1. But that's just my guessing.
I can't walk to my car late at night while on the phone. I can't open up my windows when I'm home alone. I can't go to the bar without a chaperone. I can't wear a mini skirt if it's the only one I own.
Scary Time for Boys is the song that we've been talking about, written by a woman who is a dance instructor and choreographer at Texas State. And she posted online her viral song after the president suggested it's a scary time for young men in America, given the accusations against Brett Kavanaugh. She said, well, here's what it's like for women. Yeah, it's a scary time for boys. And then she lists all the things that people like me sometimes take for granted because I never grew up with this. I never raised daughters. I guess this is my defense about being so ignorant. But the texts include these. John, I can't believe this surprises you. I've been training my daughter to be street smart since she was a preteen, but not so for my son. Well, that's the trap I fall into. 573 texted, I'm a 29-year-old woman, and none of that is anything new. 815, my daughter and I also will not stay in a hotel room on the first floor. That's a mother and daughter. All news to me. Listen to this. John, I live in downtown Rock Island and perform at several of the theaters 3 blocks from my apartment. I have to take a specific route home so that I'm in closed circuit TV the whole way in case I get snatched or attacked. Imagine planning your route so that you think you'll be under camera surveillance the whole way. John, I'm the same. I wouldn't rent a first floor apartment, and we had the same rule for my daughters, who is now at UIC.
Hey, that's where I went. Hey, that's where we went to school, Violetta.
You can
fear the flame.
By the way, Kathy, I'll give you one more try. We didn't connect earlier. Are you there?
Yes, I am. And I'm kind of passionate about this because I have nieces. And before they went to college, we had to talk about do not put your drink down and do not take it from anyone. And they were very good about that. But one of my nieces is so trusting that she did take a drink from a boy that she had been through high school with, she had known for 5 years, and was her buddy. And there, it was drugged, and he assaulted her. Then another time, she had a boyfriend for a year. She broke up with him. He physically broke into her apartment, grabbed her, took her phone, so she couldn't call the police. Fortunately, she's a rugby player, and laid him out. So she got her phone and ran out of the apartment and called the police. So these things happen. They're not unusual circumstances. And every girl that goes to college, all my students, I tell them, be careful.
Yeah.
You can never trust anyone. And that is such a sad situation.
Sorry to hear all of this. I'm really glad you called, Kathy. Thanks for listening. Yeah, you betcha. Thank you. Well, how about that? We've reached out to that woman. Her name is Lindsay Lab in Texas. Asked her to join us. Maybe we'll connect with her later this week, but I think she started a national conversation if the president hadn't already.
I don't know what her following was before this, but
oh my gosh.
56,000.
Yeah, I'll bet she's exploding, and every Me Too rally is going to want her to be singing there, or, you know, every morning and evening show is going to want her to be a guest, because she's a fine performer. She's a good entertainer. I mean, just she wrote that song, she sang it and played it well. But there's more to it than just that, isn't there? Hey, listen, Thomas Jefferson and I go on stage sometimes. It's going to be Teddy Roosevelt and I on stage at Elgin Community College. And I recorded a conversation. We're going to do it the Saturday right after the midterm. And they're just fascinating shows. But it's hard to talk to Teddy Roosevelt on the phone because he sounds like this. It's exhausting, especially through the phone. So I asked the guy that does Teddy Roosevelt for us. I said, just talk to me off the air in your normal professorial voice a little bit about who Teddy Roosevelt was and what he would be like today.
I'm imagining that he would do very well indeed, and he would have something that most of our politicians don't have, and that is a really deep reputation for character and integrity, so that even people who didn't like Roosevelt's policies knew that he was a man who said what he thought and thought what he said and did not have his political finger up into the wind, that Roosevelt had developed a view of life and that he was not afraid to espouse it, and he told the truth. And he tried to be authentic in a way that I think most politicians in our time are really not.
It's funny you mention that because I think a lot of us are now or will, when we do the show, be contrasting Roosevelt with Trump. And I think what the two of them do have in common was candor. But my own view of the two is that what separates them is maybe character. So both of them will say what they think, consequences be damned. But I don't get the feeling that Donald Trump is always completely honest with us. And that's one of the things that most impresses me about Teddy Roosevelt was his honesty.
No question. So, you know, you could draw many contrasts between Theodore Roosevelt and the current president of the United States. I mean, just give you a couple. Roosevelt wrote 40 books, 155,000 letters, innumerable articles and op-ed pieces and so on. He wrote all of these himself. He was one of the most gifted prose stylists in American history, and he read a book a day. And contrast that, say, with the current president. Roosevelt beat down barriers to get himself into the Spanish-American War. He had to work strenuously to overcome opposition from his family, opposition from President McKinley, opposition from the Secretary of the Naval Department. His best friend, Henry Cabot Lodge, told him that if he went to the war, it would be political suicide. Roosevelt did everything in his power, including, push pretty hard to get himself to the front lines in Cuba, what he called his crowded hour. You know, the current president had deferrals because of foot problems during the Vietnam War. Roosevelt is bombastic sometimes, but he was probably the best intellectually prepared president in American history. And so in all of those ways, the resemblances between Theodore Roosevelt and Donald Trump are superficially attractive, but they don't bear up under any significant scrutiny.
Well, we discovered that, but at the time when Roosevelt was vice president, and certainly when he became president, there was no great confidence for him in a lot of quarters, right?
That's true. Mark Hanna, who was the kingmaker in the Republican Party in Ohio, Hanna, who was McKinley's closest friend, said, beware, that damned cowboy might become the president of the United States. Yeah. And then McKinley was assassinated, and then that happened. There was a lot of concern that Roosevelt was sort of a McCain figure, more of a McCain figure than a Trump figure, that he was erratic, he was a maverick, he was likely to chart his own course and not stay within the broad ranks of the Republican Party. But Roosevelt did something that Donald Trump has not done. When he became president, he immediately adopted a more presidential demeanor. You know, he wore the right kind of clothing to White House functions. He said the appropriate things on national occasions. He turned the White House into a kind of a performing arts center. He had massive dignity. and presence, and in fact won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1906 for ending the Russo-Japanese War. So he made what we call the turn from being sort of crazy Roosevelt into a distinguished president of the United States, and he realized that presidential decorum is extremely important.
Clay Jenkinson's on a line. You may recognize that voice. It sounds a little like the one that does the Thomas Jefferson shows with us when we come to Chicago's various college campuses and do a little conversation on stage. He's also the man behind the character of Teddy Roosevelt, who we are going to talk to on stage Saturday, November 10th at 10:30 in the morning at Elgin Community College. There are a handful of seats left for this. Two things I just wanted to talk to you about. When we do the show, as we've done the show, we didn't talk about Obama or Bush or Clinton. We go back that far. Or even President Trump per se that much. But they're always in the room. We're asking them about the issues that these people are dealing with. I don't want our conversation in November, the Saturday after the midterm, to be Trump bashing or Trump praising. I want it to be about Roosevelt, and the contrast will speak for itself. One thing that the two have in common was that at least some of the people, a lot of people, really like Donald Trump. Did a lot of people really like Teddy Roosevelt? Was he a man of the people? Was he popular?
Yes, and let me just say, John, I agree with you 100%. You know, it may sound like we're finding fault with President Trump here. Not necessarily. President Trump may have method to his madness. He has a particular way of going about business. He thinks it has worked all of his life and that it's highly successful. And you can look to some fulfilled promises from his campaign. And, you know, that's what we want our presidents to do, to tell us what they're going to do if they're elected. And once they're elected, try to accomplish those things. I think that we have spent too much time being appalled by Donald Trump's demeanor, and we've forgotten that he really is more solid in his achievement on behalf of the people who elected him than sometimes it might appear. And so I'm only objecting to the equation of Roosevelt and Trump. They're very, very different sorts of people, but our programs are never meant to praise Obama or dump on G.W. Bush or the reverse. Roosevelt had a cult, just as Donald Trump has. Roosevelt's cult was that he was a cowboy and a war hero. Donald Trump's is that he was a reality show of success and that he was an important real estate developer in New York and elsewhere. And those mythologies, and by that I don't mean anything critical, those mythologies help a person once elected. So that, you know, if you're elected like Barack Obama and there's really no backstory of great achievement, then you have to find your public following in a different way. But if you're someone like Roosevelt, who's already done amazing things by the time he becomes president, including cowboy and ranch out in western North Dakota, that oomph, that mythology, that narrative helps carry them through difficult moments in Congress or in their administrations. And so Roosevelt was probably alarming in his time, just the way Trump is alarming in our time, by the deep, deep conviction of his followers. One of his Rough Riders said that we would follow him into hell. We would do, you know, to a slaughter. We would be lambs driven to a slaughter if Roosevelt were leading us, because they had such, you know, profound admiration for him and a belief that he was the savior for all that was wrong in the United States at the time. So in that way, their trajectories are very similar.
What are the hits? So when we get on stage and we want to tell this Roosevelt story, what do we need to talk about? Give me some of the headlines.
The fun of it is, you know, we're speaking in a really serious way today. It's very playful, and there's a ton of laughter, and Roosevelt's personality is just such that the whole audience is sort of amazed but a little bit appalled that a person of such mighty energies is amongst us and just so very overwhelming. One of his guests said that he spent 3 hours with Roosevelt in the White House, and then he went back to his hotel and wrung Roosevelt's personality out of his clothes. So that's what we're up against. We'll talk about everything. Roosevelt loves to tell stories, so no matter what you ask him, he'll wind up telling a story about punching out a drunk in a bar somewhere in Montana Territory, or the time he took the boat thieves all the way to Dickinson through a blizzard to arrest them for et cetera. But he also tells, you know, I've been doing a series of programs around the country as Roosevelt for a government and technology group, and I talk about his innovativeness. First president to go down in a submarine, first president to own an automobile, first president to send a transatlantic cable. He brought typewriters into the New York police force and fingerprinting. He embraced all of the emerging and disruptive technologies of his time to increase the capacity of the government to solve human problems. And so if we look at our problems today, John, you know, what are we going to do about immigration? Roosevelt was talking about such things. Energy policy. Roosevelt had to wrestle with those sort of things, and particularly America's place in the world. And just as Donald Trump is trying to rethink our place with NATO and the European alliance and so on, and NAFTA in terms of trade, Roosevelt was trying to figure out, well, what is America's rightful place in the world, and how much of our tax dollars do we want to contribute to this? And, you know, I think what Donald Trump is doing is trying to come back and say, let's not just take everything for granted that this is the way it has to be. Let's step back and ask ourselves, are these alliances and is this American positioning in the world really bringing us the kind of benefits we want? It's at least worth talking about. And I think the only thing that Roosevelt would say is that this conversation could be handled more rationally, more sensitively, and with a greater commitment to historical continuity. But I don't think that he would be sorry to see these questions being raised.
How about that? Pretty good, huh? So on stage, tickets at WGNradio.com/events.
It was getting so bad, I couldn't eat or sleep. I was worried about crazy socialists.
That's a disease called Bernie Sanderia.
I couldn't keep any food down.
That might be acute Brett gastrocavernitis.
All of this politics talk is getting me down.
And that's polytosis, a lingering disease that comes from too much politics.
Isn't there something I can take for this?
Now there is. And it's called Eurelium Life 9000.
Eurelium? Is it safe?
Safe? Why, it was developed by an ethnically blended group of serious people in lab coats working for a company so large and successful, their sous chefs have their own ping pong tables.
Wait, what?
Take Eurelium Life 9000 as a liquid, capsule, gel cap, eye drop, nose drip, ear burst.
Okay, got it.
Arm patch, IV, chewable briquette.
I'll do the gel cap. Thank you.
Suppository.
Sorry I asked.
And the all-new, almost ready for FDA approval home epidural kit.
That sounds like a really bad idea.
Plus, it's a rug shampoo.
I took Eurelium Life 9000 last week and haven't talked politics since.
Take Eurelium Life 9000 and say goodbye to anxiety.
Instead, we talked about that new massive hurricane. I couldn't be happier.
Always, always, always follow label directions. Close cover before striking. NLMS ID number 23. Skidoo. Yabba dabba doo.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Text me.
Here's John Williams.
Or call me. It's the same number. 312-981-7200. This is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Remember, we're on Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. And there's not a Northwestern football game. We're going to get preempted a lot this year because of that this month. That is, so go Cats. On social media, we're WGN King John, and remember that we always post a web poll question. It's a news click, something that's going on in the world. We want your opinion about it. Producer Olive, what is today's news click, please?
Michigan and North Dakota will soon vote in November on making pot recreationally legal. A, I'd vote yes on that, 90%. B, I'd vote no on that, 10%.
Come on, 10%ers, I'm counting on you. Come on, 10%ers, where are you?
Don't be afraid of change.
I am. I'm afraid of change now. I had a career in front of the microphone saying we ought to do this. And now that we're getting closer to it, Missouri's doing it recreationally maybe, North Dakota and Michigan Missouri's considering it medicinally and neighboring states are considering it recreationally. And I just got back from a recreational state. I'm nervous about it. I don't know.
But since you just got back from a recreational state, did it feel like the world was ending?
Carnage everywhere,
there?
People walking around like zombies, no work getting done. Children disobeying their parents. It was chaos. Cats and dogs living together. The whole thing. No, it seemed fine. And in fact, they tell me that the tax revenue, this is what they say. I'll have to have Elif look it up because I don't want to. But they say that the tax revenue is bang, bang, bang. It's really good. We spent some time in the last hour, by the way, talking about the lyrics of a song called A Scary Time by Lindsay Labs. She contrasts what it's like for women in this country versus, say, young boys. The president said after Brett Kavanaugh, it's a scary time for boys. She said, well, you know what's scary? I can't walk to my car late at night while on the phone. I can't open up my windows when I'm home alone. I can't go to a bar without a chaperone. I can't even wear a miniskirt if it's the only one I own. And we talked about some of the things that maybe men take for granted that women sure don't. This texter says, John, you're on another topic now, but I want to chime in that I did not buy the first floor when I bought my first condo. It was second nature not to consider the first floor, which was cheaper. And I was 49. This one says, from 630, around 1979, I had my own apartment. And the fix-it guy would come around. And when she decided not to renew her lease, the landlord asked why she decided not to. And she said, I didn't have the nerve to let him know that it was because of when his fix-it guy came around and how he would look at me. I was 24 at the time. So just another eye-opening conversation. Thanks so much for your thoughts and your texts and your calls.
Wait, can I just add something to that text?
Yeah.
That makes it worse, is that she says that he would schedule his visits around the time she woke up in the morning.
First time he came by, it was a Saturday morning. He got a look at her, and then whenever something needed to be done in her apartment, he'd make sure it was Saturday morning. And she just said, I can't do this anymore. There's so many things going on there. This story of the most deadly car crash in American history, a single car crash, a limo where all the occupants died, is still taking our breath away. I'll tell you, here's one takeaway for me on that. I look at those limos, I've never thought those things look safe. Where they take, I don't know how they do it, they give it some pills, somehow the limos, the, you know, a Ford or a Hummer or something suddenly is 20 feet long. I don't know how that happens. And you see those things going around, and I think, not only does that vehicle look unsafe to me, but I don't know what's going on inside there, but I'm guessing that those people aren't buckled in and that it's just not a safe environment. It's so much fun to be in a limo. It's dangerous looking to me. Always has been. And then this happens. And how did this happen? We still don't know all of the answers yet. The wife of the driver, who also died in the crash, said that he was a good driver. He didn't have a CDL, but she said that for 20-plus years, he drove a rig, and he'd been driving a limo without any incident, and he was a good driver. So why was he going so fast? Why did he run the stop sign? And how is it that with nothing else, there was no other vehicle in the collision, it didn't tumble down a hill, it was fatal to everybody? Here's my question, though. So what does this make you think about the next time they want to get on the pedal pub or the trolley or the fun stretch limo to go celebrate a party or go to or from a wedding? I mean, is this giving you second thoughts about that? Sure is me. Chris Ferroni is on a phone line. He's an ARCCA expert in forensic, scientific, and engineering solutions. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but he's on a phone line right now, and I think he's going to explain it to us. Hi, Chris. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
You're a Chicago-based business, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
What do you do?
So the firm in general, as well as myself, investigates all types of accidents. I specialize in heavy equipment and commercial motor vehicle-type accidents and failure analysis, along with the driver conduct evaluation, and regulatory compliance.
Your family owned some transportation businesses?
We did. We were very fortunate. For 110 years, we owned several bus companies here in Chicago. We just sold the business a little over a year ago. My grandfather, my father, my uncle, and myself ran the businesses. I retired after 42 years when we sold the businesses.
Your degrees in mechanical and automotive engineering?
Yes, sir. That's true.
Well, then you're the perfect guest for this, aren't you?
Well, we'll see. I hope I can help.
Well, what do you think about that crash? And what do you think about my general apprehension about those vehicles?
Well, it's a fair concern for parents or anybody who is getting on a vehicle like that. You know, obviously we make choices like that to be safe so we can, you know, enjoy ourselves at a party
right,
without having to put ourselves at risk of driving.
Yeah.
So, of course, the assumption is you want to be taken care of and being taken care of safely. And you have to select the proper operator that is going to protect you.
There's a way to know?
In essence, in a very general sense, there is. The type of operator that you want to select is an interstate motor carrier who is registered with the U.S. DOT and is given a registration number. And they have to follow very strict guidelines for the driver, drug and alcohol training, drug and alcohol monitoring, vehicle maintenance, and all kind of vehicle record keeping, and they're subject to blind audits by the DOT.
You told me off the air today that there's a safer program. What is that?
Sure. So the U.S. DOT now provides a website, and I'll just give it to you. It's called safer.fmcsa.dot.gov, and if you take the potential motor carrier who you're going to hire, your limo company or your party bus, and put their DOT number into that, it will give you a safety snapshot of that company, which includes accidents, fatalities, vehicles out of service due to poor maintenance, or drivers out of service being out of compliance.
Okay, I'll put that website on our Facebook page and on our website, on my Facebook page and on our website with this podcast. We're obviously podcasting the shows. After we're done, we put them back up on the air. You can listen to them. And right next to that will be the link to the site that you just described. Well, that would be interesting. If I was going to then get something for prom or for a wedding party or something like that, I could go to this Safer website, type in the number, and then it would tell me what the history is on this company, huh?
That is correct. But the one caveat is the motor carrier has to be a interstate carrier. If you are an intrastate, in other words, solely within Illinois, you are not issued a number by the government, and therefore you couldn't check. So what I would recommend is always try to hire an interstate motor carrier.
What do you think of those cars? How do they get a limo to be that long anyway?
Well, you know, in sort of very general sense, they take generally a brand new SUV or a brand new maybe Lincoln Town Car produced by Ford or General Motors or whoever, and they actually saw it in half in a particular location of the vehicle where they want to separate it, and then they separate it 10, 12 feet, whatever the distance they want to elongate it by. They extend the frame rails or the structure. They fabricate sheet metal to give the same appearance as the doors and everything on the original automobile. They outfit and trim the interior to have couches or chairs and lights and skylights and a bar, perhaps. And essentially, you as a result, get this limousine.
It just looks too long. It looks too like if there was a collision, it would tear apart. It just doesn't look safe to me.
Well, you know, obviously, as we did say off the air, there are good limousine manufacturers, and obviously there's probably a fair share that cut corners and don't do a good job. Of course, the user, anybody who's renting the limousine, you wouldn't know the difference. So, like I said, if you could always make choices, or if you have to make a choice, if you use an interstate carrier, chances are you're going to get a better vehicle.
You said off the air, think about this, and I hadn't until you mentioned it, but say you buy that SUV, and it's for 8 passengers, maybe, and a certain amount of weight that the vehicle has and that the car might have. Then you cut it in half, put a bunch of metal in between, and then instead of 8 passengers, you got 20 people in that vehicle. The weight is a lot greater. Now, roll that thing along the road at 60 miles an hour. Now you got to stop. Well, the brakes may be the same brakes that were in the SUV when it was manufactured. With all of this additional weight rolling forward, that I never thought about that, but they got to get special or better or, I don't know, more brakes. That just, again, seems to be another level of concern.
Absolutely. Hit the nail on the head. The vehicle, as it comes out as sort of a family vehicle, is designed with its components to, as you just said, manage, you know, the 5,000 to 6,000 pounds that it's designed to carry. When you turn it into a limousine, it could easily double in weight. And so you hope that the manufacturer that's converting this into the limousine has transmission, upgraded the brakes, the steering, the suspension, wheel bearings, and other technical items that are all load-bearing and that are, you know, weight-sensitive and then become safety-sensitive.
Chris Ferroni's on a phone line. He's an expert in this sort of thing. Can you tell his Chicago company? I mean, he's from this area, but he's been doing this all around the country for years. Maybe you've got a question, a comment, an observation, too. Here's another thing I want you to answer, Chris, after a break. I know you haven't studied this case any more than maybe some of us have, but isn't it odd that without another vehicle really being involved, it hit an SUV, another vehicle that was on the road or in a parking lot, but there was nobody in it. It spun that thing around. So that really wasn't what led to all of the deaths. It didn't tumble down a hill. I mean, what do you think happened that caused everybody to perish? It's the strangest thing, beyond being tragic. Talking right now about that limousine crash, which everybody died, Chris Ferroni is an expert in forensics, scientific, and engineering solutions. He's a Chicago guy. By the way, what's the name of your company? Am I doing the name of your company when I read all of that stuff? ARCCA Experts, is that you?
Correct. It's you can pronounce it ARCA. It's an acronym, but it's pronounced ARCA. That's correct.
All right. I want to put in a couple calls, too, because, you know, I said, gee, how is it that everybody died? But Bill, like some of you, wanted to say what? You're on WGN, Bill. Hi.
Yeah, according to what I saw on the news and what I read too, that was a T road he came to.
Yep.
And he's supposed to stop, but I don't know if he's going too fast and didn't see it or why. He probably was, but he went through that parking lot and hit that other SUV or what it was.
Yeah.
Killed the two people in the parking lot, and then they said he went down this embankment and slammed into a big tree head on because it was so much speed and so powerful crash it knocked the engine almost halfway back into the van, into the limo.
Yeah, so...
Now, he must have been traveling. He must have been traveling 70, 80 mile an hour or more. And my theory is, why do you even allow those type of cars on the road? Why would you be allowed to reconstruct a vehicle to be that length of strength of that time? If you want that many people, get a bus that's made for it.
I think those are all good points and questions. Thanks, Bill. Go ahead, Christopher. What do you want to say to that call?
Well, I think the gentleman is generally correct. As we said off the air, the unfortunate tragedy here is all these people were killed in this accident. The chances are it was not because they hit that SUV. It was most likely because of their coming to a sudden stop, hitting this ravine or a tree or wherever they ended up hitting. And since most of them, I'm sure, were unbelted, free bodies inside the vehicle, it was a horrible moment that... they were just free inside the vehicle, floating around and crashing into hard surfaces, and I'm sure that was what led to their unfortunate passing.
They don't have to wear seatbelts when they're passengers in those cars, do they? Do you think that they should reconsider that in general?
I do think they should. Motor coach regulations were changed a few years ago. I don't have it off the top of my head, but suffice it to say, in the last 3 years, production of new motor coaches, similar to Greyhound buses, mandate seatbelts. And school buses have had seatbelts for years. And I think that's a trend that should be continued into this type of industry as well. Absolutely.
I'm going to call you again. We'll visit maybe on this topic or something along these lines again another day. But you've been really helpful, Chris. I appreciate your time and your expertise.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Chris Ferroni, ARCA experts in forensic, scientific, and engineering solutions. That's what they do.
And it's Halloween, it's time for scares, it's time for screams, it's Halloween.
This is my Halloween song.
The ghost will spook, the spooks will scare, why even Dracula will be there. It's time for games, it's time for fun, not for this one, but for every.
Why even Dracula would be well. Okay, that'll be enough of that. It's Halloween by the Shags. Cue up the other version, too, when you get a chance there, Producer Elif. Then we'll be able to enjoy the instrumental part of it as well. Kevin, that was your first time hearing the Shags? It's Halloween?
No, I've heard that before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you heard that, Kevin?
Well, when you produce in radio, you stock up on every single Halloween song you can find, because then the week of Halloween, when you come back with every bump and you want a Halloween song, you mix it up a little bit. So you've heard just about every Halloween song. It's just about every holiday song, really.
Right, if you have an album or a CD or a file with Monster Mash, the Shags are probably two or three clicks down.
Right. You just find everything you could possibly, like, could potentially relate to Halloween, throw it in a file, and then, you know, you use it at some point. So, yeah, I've heard that.
The Shags were an all-girl group from, I think, Indiana, like in the 1960s. Their dad had a vision. Actually, I think their grandmother had a vision that someday her son would have children and that those children would become a popular pop band the way the Jacksons or the Osmonds did. And the Jacksons were from Indiana, and so the vision was that they would have a family of musicians from Indiana. So he homeschooled them, or didn't school them much, and kept them in the basement and gave them instruments and said, learn to play. And they did, and then they did county fairs, and they were no better than what you just heard. It's Halloween is maybe their biggest hit.
It didn't really work out for them.
It's a tragic story is what it is.
It really is. That
I mean, imagine
sad.
Working so hard and being like such a demanding father, and then that's your best work right there.
They don't even sound literate, and they're not real good musicians. Frank Zappa, though, found, you know, inspiration in them, but he would. And Zappa was like a genius. The Shags were just some girls who couldn't play or sing from Indiana.
Dad, we think we found a hit. We finally got one. This is it. And here, then they play that song.
And then they play this. This is the part where they're rocking out. This is them racking out.
This sounds like a bunch of people picking up instruments for the first time and pretending like they're rock stars.
That's enough.
I should point out that this is in English. It is in English.
Where's the rhythm in that thing? It's like this.
We know what it's like. We know what it's like.
We know what it's so syncopated.
Well, that's all they got.
Well, good for them. At least we're playing on WGN Radio right now.
I'd like
now.
To see you be a band.
That's right.
We see you do better.
I will.
So that's the Shags. And it's scary, isn't it? It's Halloween.
I just started getting into the Halloween mood. I watched the original Halloween a couple nights ago.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how I let this... slip past me, but a new fresh Halloween is coming out in a couple of weeks.
And Halloween 5, right? With Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. And the original Halloween is one of my all-time favorite movies, not just
as
favorite horror
be.
Movies. It's just one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah,
I got super pumped when I saw the trailer for the new one, and I'm like, I'm going back to watch the original.
Has anybody seen the trailer for the new Dick Cheney movie, Vice?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Well,
Christian Bale allegedly is playing Dick Cheney, but we all know it's actually Dick Cheney.
That's not Christian Bale. That's that may be Dick Cheney playing Dick Cheney.
Spot on.
But it's he's got that voice. That kind of sinister, talking out the side of your mouth voice. He's got the lip action down. It's scary. Forget about the body language. He has the mouth language of Dick Cheney down.
Mm-hmm.
First Batman and now Dick Cheney.
Oh, my God. And the poor guy had to gain weight. That couldn't be healthy.
It's probably fun, though. Someone's like, hey, get fat. Like, cool. All right.
Yeah.
Let's go eat cheeseburgers and pizza every day.
You know, and these people suffer for their art because I think if I were told to do that, like, oh, great, I'll eat cheeseburgers and pizza all day. That's going to shorten my life. Like, really, if I better get an Oscar out of this because that cannot be healthy. I'll lose the weight, but having that weight even for 10 minutes is not good for me, you know?
Plus, he's done the extreme the other way, too, right? Hasn't he had these crazy... Doesn't he like doing this where he loses, like, 50 pounds, and then the next movie he does, he gains, like, 100 pounds?
Right. I would just, like, you know, memo to my capillaries. Trust me, there's an award in this for all of us. You're going to freeze up and I'm going to die young, but it's going to be worth it. I promise you that. Just text message my arteries. Hey, hey, here comes a cheeseburger. Trust me, we'll work it off. The news click at WGNradio.com is a daily web poll question. We ask you to respond to something in the news. Producer Olive, do we have the news click ready? Hit it when you do.
Michigan and North Dakota will soon vote in November on making pot recreationally legal. A. I'd vote yes on that, 90%. B. I'd vote no on that, 10%.
Is anybody voting on this thing? I can't believe that. You would think, would somebody please vote with me
on
this?
I'm going right now.
Vote there and move the needle, will you? To the left? I would vote no on this.
You can't tell me how to vote.
I know. It shows how much sway I have over anything. I can't even rig my own news click.
I mean, what are we doing here? How is
are you Taylor Swift now,
yet?
John?
I'm leveraging my celebrity status, and it's going nowhere. What's the matter, Kevin? What are you complaining about?
I mean, are we serious here? We're still having this debate? I thought pot was already like close to being legal in all aspects of life. What's the big deal?
Right. They've decriminalized it largely. So if you do get caught with it, they're not going to throw you in jail as long as they used to. But that's not the direction the federal government is going. And in fact, in states where it's legal, it's still not federally legal. So they've got that to deal with.
How about this? Cigarettes are statistically much worse for you.
Right.
Why aren't people getting thrown in jail for that? For smoking? You're making yourself susceptible to an earlier death.
Yeah, but that's not...
Let me do what I want to do.
Well, but, you know, cigarettes will shorten your life, but marijuana will shorten your day, right? You'll get in a crash. You'll be high. You'll be stoned.
That's for sure.
Yeah, that's the difference. Yeah.
Cigarettes don't make you... They don't alter your perceptions or whatever.
I know. So it came up for a couple of reasons. One is that... In Michigan and North Dakota, they're voting on its retail in November. You know, they'll make it recreational there and medicinally available in Missouri, I think. So I was talking to a friend about that at breakfast this morning, and he was, you know, telling me about his marijuana experiences from the night before and laughing at me because I've never done it. And he said, you know, and he shows me his pinky fingernail. And then he says, half of my pinky fingernail, that much is a one hit, is so good. And he said, you know, like after work, have dinner, and then I want to chill out. I'll get a little of that going. It's that much, just that tiny amount. I sound like I'm advocating for it. I'm not. I'm telling you the conversation I had. And he said, you know, the birds fly over. And the leaves are blowing in the trees, and it's a nice, almost summer-like evening, and it was just so awesome.
John, you should do it for the first time and then document it and talk about it on the radio the next
report
day.
Back to you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely listen to that.
Do it live on the radio.
Do it!
Yeah.
Do like Elon Musk did.
Yeah, look at this microphone.
Well, he was doing a little bit of that, but he said, you know, I mean, why do you have a cocktail after work or do whatever it is that you do? He said, this works. And it's just
this works. People who like weed love weed. Like they're like, dude, you just don't get it, man.
And I don't. Here's
neither do I. But I it's like whatever. You know.
Well, here's part of my problem. I said, but the business of enjoying a cocktail or a beer is you hold the glass, you sip it, you taste it. It takes a little time.
But you ever seen somebody smoke a blunt before? They do the same thing. They like look at it. They appreciate it. They like pinch it a little bit.
I guess
they
so.
Taste it.
Yeah.
They inhale it. It's like a whole thing to them.
Yeah.
They're like, whoa, look at this blunt. Great rap, man.
They don't all sound like that.
Yeah, they do, Violetta. All stoners sound like this. Whatever, in my head they do.
And my friend's not, he's a professional guy. He works and he's got a job. He's got a family. He's got kids.
Yeah. I mean, most people are like friends of mine who are like accountants, you know? They go home and they smoke weed or do the pen or eat the whatever. It's whatever. It's no big deal. They don't suffer from their, you know, it doesn't hurt their job or anything like that.
So he asked me when I was in Colorado the other day if I did, and I said I didn't. I'm afraid.
Afraid.
Just have a gummy bear.
Do it.
I said to him, is it possible for men in their 50s to badger each other into, I mean, we
to get peer pressured by a couple millennials on the radio.
It's like, what are we, 16? I'm 58. You're not going to do
it. It's not going to kill you.
If you say do it, if the whole class said do it, do you think I'm going to start crying or go, okay, I will?
Yes, I think based on your web poll question, you should either go back to Denver and try it.
God bless WGN listeners. 90% of you are thumbs up on this, and I'm in the 10% for a change.
It's just where we're at as a society.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, regardless of what your recreational interests are, do we really need to continue to criminalize the people or the stuff? I don't know.
I mean, most people do what you just explained to me with your buddy. Like, that's, of course, there's the risk, yes, with driving things like that and operating stuff. But for the most part, it is people like after work, late at night, just chilling out for a couple hours.
And it crosses all generations.
Evidently. I mean...
It's not just young kids doing it. It's It's everybody.
58-year-olds, 62-year-olds.
Yeah, reliving the dream.
A friend of mine, he and his wife, different couple now, bought a house, then gutted it, redid it, and you know, made it like a lot of families will that have been successful in their careers long enough that they can do that. God bless them. So they bought a house kind of cheap, flipped it, and made it their own. And in the upstairs bedroom, you know how guys might have a humidor or a smoking room? He has a pot room with special fans and things so that he can enjoy it. He's not. They have kids, and he's not going to be token around them.
Got a microwave with a mini fridge full of Hot Pockets.
Off the bedroom, it's like Dad's office. We don't go there. It's locked.
Dad's stealing all the Pop-Tarts again. Mom, can you buy some more?
Mom, didn't we have like a case of Pop-Tarts on Thursday?
What happened to the pizza rolls?
And he's up there.
Don't touch Dad's Tostitos.
He's upstairs just chilling.
I haven't seen him in weeks.
And he's older than me, you know? I haven't seen him in
just
weeks.
Just a microwave going nonstop. You just hear like a lighter and then a microwave and then another lighter comes out with a beard.
Okay, this is the kind of conversation I don't want to have, this sort of yucking it up about a serious issue. You cannot talk about this whole thing. You can't have this conversation with somebody doing the stoner voice that Kevin's doing. You know?
I feel like I had a gummy now.
And then they always do this. They go, well, it'll really help the tax revenue. My friend, as we're eating our eggs, goes, you know, Illinois is really in financial straits. This would fix that.
Right. That's the thing. That's what I'm saying. They don't like weed. They love weed. Like, it'll solve all the problems on the face of the earth.
Shut up. This is not going to fix
It's a way of life.
The financial problems for Illinois. It is not going to fix it.
Definitely not.
I'm on board if it is.
Because it's assuming that everyone that buys and smokes weed already is immediately going to go to the government to buy their own weed.
And they're going to buy a lot.
It's like the gambling argument. You think we can make like $1 billion. No, you can't. Why would anybody leave their bookie? You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be a small fraction of what you would guess that
that's
already gambled.
Yeah, because they're already getting, what I understand is, pretty good stuff.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so I don't know. All right, well, that's where the news click is. We're asking you if you are in the 90% or in the correct 10% that says, wait, I don't buy the tax argument, and the whole thing makes me a little nervous. This is WGN.
It was getting so bad, I couldn't eat or sleep. I was worried about crazy socialists.
That's a disease called Bernie Sanderia.
I couldn't keep any food down.
That might be acute Brett gastrocavernitis.
All this politics talk is getting me down.
And that's politosis, a lingering disease that comes from too much politics.
Isn't there something I can take for this?
Now there is. And it's called Urillium Life 9000.
Urillium. Is it safe?
Safe? Why, it was developed by an ethnically blended group of serious people in lab coats working for a company so large and successful, their sous chefs have their own ping pong tables.
Wait, what?
Take Urillium Life 9000 as a liquid, capsule, gel cap, eye drop, nose drip, ear burst.
Okay, got it.
Arm patch, IV, chewable briquette.
I'll do the gel cap. Thank you.
Suppository.
Sorry I asked.
And the all-new, almost ready for FDA approval home epidural kit.
That sounds like a really bad idea.
Plus, it's a rug shampoo.
I took Urillium Life 9000 last week and haven't talked politics since.
Take Urillium Life 9000 and say goodbye to anxiety.
Instead, we talked about that new massive hurricane. I couldn't be happier.
Always, always, always follow label directions. Close cover before striking. NLMS ID number 23. Skidoo. Yabba-dabba-doo.
Yeah, man. Try that Urillium. I hear it's good stuff. Coming up, the stories that matter with Judy Pilak. That's from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. What are Ro and Anna up to, too? We find out next. Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis, ready to roll. What's up, kids?
Ha! Yeah!
Dude, there you are.
Ah!
Bro, did you bring the za?
I was listening to John Williams.
Super mature, guys.
Very. And I was like,
lighting up.
He was like, harsh.
Dude, I know, man.
Yeah, I'm kind of with the whole notion that it's a little much for me, but I don't care. I like the fact that people are stoned because that means that I'll get more stuff.
What do you mean you'll get right? more stuff?
More jobs, more better seats in theaters, but more like shorter lines.
They're going to be late. They're not showing up.
Right. At every shorter lines at everywhere except for the grocery store. Which is going to be
right. You know,
just the 7-Eleven. Forget
right.
about it.
And
exactly.
if you want to order a pizza, it might take extra time.
Yes,
that would be one
that
side
is
effect.
True. Mm-hmm. That's true. But other than that, I'm kind of okay with the whole thing.
What's the first subject you're going to do today?
Well, we have quite a bit of things. We're going to take you back to that storm center a couple different times today, and we will we'll check in on what's going on there, because that hurricane is the lowest barometric pressure ever to hit the continental United States.
Wow. You're kidding, really?
Think about
That's pretty crazy.
Like 28? I don't know even whether 20-something.
Third lowest ever recorded.
I have a barometric pressure joke.
Oh, gosh. Do we want to hear it?
Guy bought a barometer, and it read 27. And he took it back to the store and said, the barometer doesn't work. And they gave him a new one. And then he went back, and his house was gone. That's the end of my barometric pressure joke.
Too soon.
Dude, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh,
sick joke.
You know what? Lochte told me that.
All right. Goodbye.
Hello, I'm Lochte.
Bye, John.
Bye.
All right. Bye. Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. I think I'm afraid, Kevin, go apologize to John for us. Would you meet him in the hallway?
Sorry, bro.